Chief Clerk will call roll.
Anderson.
Here.
Bebout.
Here.
Burns.
Here.
Case.
Here.
Coe.
Here.
Cooper.
Here.
DeCaria.
Here.
Dockstader.
Here.
Esquibel.
Here.
Geis.
Here.
Hastert.
Here.
Honeycutt.
Here.
Jennings.
Here.
Johnson.
Here.
Landon. Larson,
here.
Martin,
here.
Massey,
here.
Meyer,
here.
Nicholas,
here.
Perkins,
here.
Peterson,
here.
Ross,
here.
Schiffer,
here.
Scott,
here.
Sessions,
here.
Townsend,
here.
Basie,
here.
Von Flatern,
here.
President Hines,
here.
30 present.
Prayer by Father Cronkleton.
Lord God, when we view the majesty of the Tetons, Gannett Peak, Cloud Peak, Medicine Bow Peak, and even Devil's Tower, when we look with wonder at Yellowstone Falls, the Wind River Canyon, and the Snake River Canyon, when we see the power of the Green and Platte Rivers, we believe that these marvels either have always been or have achieved their glory in a brief expression of effort. In truth, all these things came to be what they are after centuries of continental plates pressing upon each other, raising what were seabeds and plains to great heights, and the snow, ice, water, and wind sculpting the earth to form the hills, valleys, and streams. Lord, as we ponder our own existence and endeavors, it would be easy to look and see all that we have yet to accomplish in this session, with the many bills, resolutions, and amendments piled high, and become overwhelmed. But if we remember that something as simple as the constant pressure of the earth's crust and the steady flow of water and wind form the wonders of our land, our patient efforts in committees and in this chamber will shape the legislation needed by the people we govern. When this day, when this week, and when days from now this session is finished, we pray that we can look back with awe on the accomplishments of what we have achieved, just as we look with wonder on the natural beauties of this great state. Give us the grace, the patience, and we need this day and each day of this session to accomplish our noble task. We ask this in the name of Jesus, our Lord. Amen.
Please join me in a pledge of allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Reading, correction, and approval of the journal. Will the reading clerk please read the journal committee report?
Mr. President, your journal committee reports that the journal of January the 28th, 2009, has been read and recommends that it be approved. Senator Dockstader, Chairman.
Are there any objections? Being none, the report is adopted. Doctor of the day is Christina Stefka, MD from here in Cheyenne, and we have no scheduled nurses today. Thought for the day, before you give somebody a piece of your mind, make sure you can get by with what you have left. Introduction, reading, and reference of bills. Senate File 145, first reading of the bill.
Senate File Number 145, Hospital 145, sponsored by Senator Nicholas, Hospital and Healthcare District Services to Providers, and Act Relating to Memorial Hospitals.
Senate File 145 is referred to Committee Number 1. Judiciary, Senate File 144, first reading of the bill.
Senate File 144, sponsored by Senator Dockstader, Property Tax Assessment Rules, an act relating to taxation and revenue.
Senate File 144 is referred to Committee Number 3, Revenue. House bills on first reading. House Bill 106, first reading of the bill.
House Bill Number 106, Firearm Ownership, Domestic Violence of Offenses, sponsored by Senator Lubnow, an act relating to criminal procedure. Pass the House on third reading, ayes 58, noes 1, excused 1.
House Bill 106 is referred to Committee Number 1, Judiciary. House Bill 165, first reading of the bill.
House Bill Number 165, sponsored by Senator Lubnow, Adult Adoption, an act relating to civil procedure. Pass the House on third reading, ayes 58, noes 1, excused 1.
House Bill 165 is referred to Committee Number 1, Judiciary. House Bill 138, first reading of the bill.
House Bill Number 138, sponsored by Representative Madden, Property Tax Refund Program, an act relating to taxation and revenue. Pass the House on third reading, ayes 59, excused 1.
House Bill 138 is referred to Committee Number 3, Revenue. House Bill 221, first reading of the bill.
House Bill Number 221, sponsored by Representative Throne, Property Tax Appeals 2, an act relating to property taxation. Pass the House, ayes 60.
House Bill 221 is referred to Committee Number 3, Revenue. House Bill 12, first reading of the bill.
House Bill Number 12, sponsored by the Agriculture Committee, Brand Inspection Fees, an act relating to brand inspection fees. Pass the House on third reading in an amended form. Ayes 59, excused 1.
House Bill 12, referred to Committee Number 5, Agriculture. House Bill 8, first reading of the bill.
House Bill Number 8, sponsored by the Corporations Committee, Certified Public Accountants Revisions, an act relating to certified public accountants. Pass the House on third reading, ayes 59, excused 1.
House Bill 8 is referred to Committee Number 7, Corporations. House Bill 46, first reading of the bill.
House Bill Number 46, sponsored by the Transportation Committee, National Guard Medical Professional Retention Programs, and act relating to the National Guard. Pass the House on third reading in an amended form. Ayes 57, noes 1, excused 1, conflict 1.
House Bill 46 is referred to Committee Number 8, Transportation. House Bill 51, first reading of the bill.
House Bill Number 51, sponsored by Representative Bagby, Handicapped Motorcycle Plates, an act relating to motor vehicles. Pass the House on third reading, ayes 59, excused 1.
House Bill 51 is referred to Committee Number 8, Transportation. House Bill 2, first reading of the bill.
House Bill Number 2, sponsored by Representative Childers, Street Rods and Custom Vehicles, an act relating to motor vehicles. Pass the House on third reading, ayes 58, noes 1, excused 1.
House Bill number 2 is referred to Committee number 8, Transportation. House Bill 29, first reading of the bill.
House Bill number 29, sponsored by the Tribal Committee, Tribal Participation and Community Facilities Program, an act relating to the Community Facilities Program. Pass the House on third reading, ayes 59, excused 1.
House Bill 29 is referred to Committee number 9, Minerals. House Bill 182, first reading of the bill.
House Bill number 182, sponsored by Representative Dan Zwanitzer, Low Profit Limited Liability Companies, an act relating to limited liability companies. Pass the House on third reading, ayes 60.
House Bill 182 is referred to Committee number 9, Minerals. Bills on second reading. Reports from standing committees.
January the 28th, 2009, Mr. President, your Committee number 9, Minerals, Business, and Economic Development, to whom was referred Senate File 128, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass amended. I, Senators Bebout, Cooper, Honeycutt, Larson, and Martin, Senator Larson, Chairman.
Bills on second reading. Senate File 23, second reading of the Senate file.
Accelerated Nursing Degree Loan Repayment Program.
There is amendment. Would the reading clerk please read in the amendment?
Senate File 23, second reading amendment number 1. Delete the Senate Standing Committee amendment.
Senator Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I move second reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 23. This accomplishes the exact same thing as the first standing committee amendment number 1, but in a manner that's more befitting of what the staff thinks we should be doing. I urge your support.
Senator Scott.
Mr. President, two questions. One, I would like a little more explanation. Is there any, what's the difference? And second, does it change the amount of money and therefore require a roll call?
Senator Massey.
Thank you, Mr. President. First of all, it does not change any of the money. It's $250,000 before the amendment and $250,000 afterwards. I think it's a technical amendment that the Legislative Service Office has suggested that will allow this language to blend better with the budget bill that is in existence now and that we're going to be considering in about a week. So essentially does the same thing as the amendment that was adopted on the Committee of the Whole. It's just the language will jive better with the budget bill.
Senator Nicholas.
Thank you. And that's, if you'll recall, the First Amendment had the entire expense organization for the agency. It's, and we would, if we had used the first mechanism to move the funds from one area to another, we would have had two adopted expense organizations by the end of the session. The budget staff did not think that was appropriate, so what we do is by language move it from expense organization, or it would be from one unit to another unit.
Question is second reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 23. All in favor say aye. Those opposed, no. Amendment passed. Senate File 23, having been read two separate times. The question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objections, it is so ordered. Senate File 26, second reading of the Senate file.
Voter registration deadline.
Senate File 26, having been read two separate times. The question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objections, it is so ordered. Senate File 63, second reading of the Senate file.
Text messages while driving prohibited.
There is an amendment. Would the reading clerk please read the amendment in?
Senate File 63, second reading amendment number 1, page 1 before line 1.
Senator Escobel.
Mr. Chairman, move first reading second amendment to Senate File 63. And this just basically changes some language in the catch title. It, I think, makes it more appropriate to the body of the bill. Ask for your favorable recommendation. Thank you.
Discussion on the amendment. Question been called for on second reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 63. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Amendment passed. Senate File 63 having been read two separate times. The question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objections, it is so ordered. Senate File 94. Second reading of the Senate file.
Senate File 94, sponsored by Senator Jennings, campaign finance reporting election periods.
Senate File 94, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objections, it is so ordered. Senate File 102, second reading of the Senate file.
County officials' salaries.
Senator Jennings.
Mr. President, may I have the privilege of the floor?
You may.
Mr. President, yesterday there was a question asked about when was the last time that these judges got a raise, the DAs got a raise, and I have to admit that I was texting while legislating, and I got a reply back. It said in 2003 the circuit judges were at 82, now at 102. I think it's supposed to be DAs, or DJs are now at 125 and 2, and DAs are still at 94 after the election of 2002, when they took office. In 2003, they're at 94.5, and they're still there. Thank you, Mr. President.
Senate File 102, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objections, it is so ordered. Senate File 114, second reading of the Senate file.
Animal control.
There is an amendment. Would the reading clerk please read the amendment?
Senate File 114, second reading amendment number 1, page 2, line 16.
Senator Schiffer.
Mr. President, I move second reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 114. Mr. President, what this amendment does, it goes in on page 2, starting on line 16, and adds a new sentence. Home quarantine may be allowed. It's determined by the animal control officer or the county sheriff. And then it adds in the language, if the dog's owner or custodian presents a valid rabies vaccination certificate showing the dog has been vaccinated against rabies by a licensed veterinarian. In other words, brings back in that option that if a dog owner's dog gets impounded, if you can show that you've got current rabies shot, you can take them home. What I'm getting at is this process sets up a dog might be impounded for quite a long time. Given the way that paperwork has to flow and all those things, and if you can show that your dog's vaccinated, rabies vaccine is an incredibly effective vaccine. It's up in the 80-90% effective, which in an animal vaccine is, that's as good as it gets. That's stellar, actually. It seems to me that if the risk is that minimal, the dog owner ought to be able to go take their dog home. They can keep an eye on him. That's the way it's done now. Take them home. They're in home quarantine. You don't have to pay for it. Well, you got to pay for it. Take care of your dog, but you're not at a dog pound somewhere. So that's what this amendment does. We did visit with the state health officer from the Department of Health, I won't say he was jubilant, but he's sure going to go along with this, it sounds like. I ask for your favorable reaction.
Senator Martin.
President, yesterday as we discussed this piece of legislation, the good senator from KC did bring up a very good point. We were able to have a conversation with the state health officer, and I feel that it's a very friendly amendment, and I ask for your support.
Ready for the question? Question is, second reading amendment number 1 to Senate file 114 passed. Please, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Amendment passed. Senate file 114 having been read 2 separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objections, it is so ordered. Senate file 115, second reading of the Senate file.
Senate file number 115, investment of state funds revision.
Senate file 115, having been read 2 separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objections, it is so ordered. Senate file 117, second reading of the Senate file.
Wyoming Health Insurance Pool Act eligibility.
Senate file 117, having been read 2 separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objections, it is so ordered. Senate file 130, second reading of the Senate file.
Child abuse penalties.
Senate file 130, having been read 2 separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objections, it is so ordered. Bills on third reading and final passage. Mr. Majority Floor Leader, do we have a consent list?
Mr. President, yes, we do. The third reading consent list for today is as follows. Senate File 60, National Guard Youth Challenge Program. Senate File 72, Corporations Act Amendments. Senate File 95, Medical Necessity Review Procedures. Senate File 98, Fines for Speeding Trucks. Senate File 101, Trona Utility Shot Fire Certification. Senate File 107, Court Supervised Treatment Programs Act. Senate File 110, Designated Real Estate Agents.
The consent list is Senate File 60, National Guard Youth Challenge Program. Senate File 72, Corporations Act Amendments. Senate File 95, Medical Necessity Review Procedures. Senate File 98, Fines for Speeding Trucks. Senate File 101, Trona Utility Shot Fire Certification. Senate File 107, Court Supervised Treatment Program Act. Senate File 110, Designated Real Estate Agent. Does anyone want any of these bills removed from the consent list? Having been read 3 separate times, the question is, shall these bills pass the Senate? Senate File 60, Senate File 72, Senate File 95, Senate File 98, Senate File 101, Senate File 107, and Senate File 110. The Chief Clerk will call the roll.
Anderson.
Aye.
Bebout.
Aye.
Burns.
Aye.
Case.
Aye.
Coe.
Aye.
Cooper.
Aye.
DeCaria.
Aye.
Dockstader.
Aye.
Esquibel.
Aye.
Geis.
Aye.
Hastert.
Aye.
Honeycutt.
Aye.
Jennings.
Aye.
Johnson.
Aye.
Landon.
Aye.
Larson.
Aye.
Martin.
Aye.
Massey.
Aye.
Meyer.
Aye.
Nicholas.
Aye.
Perkins.
Aye.
Peterson.
Aye.
Ross.
Aye.
Schiffer.
Aye.
Scott.
Aye.
Sessions.
Aye.
Townsend.
Aye.
Basie.
Aye.
Bonflatern.
Aye.
President Hines.
Aye.
On the consent list, 30 ayes. Senate File 60, are there any changes? Case, aye to no. Massey, aye to no. Closing vote. Closing vote closed. Senate File 60, 28 ayes, 2 noes. Senate File 72, are there any changes? Closing vote. Closing vote closed. Senate File 72, 30 ayes. Senate File 95, are there any changes? Closing vote. Perkins, aye to no. Closing vote. Closing vote closed. Senate File 95, 29 ayes, 1 no. Senate File 98, are there any changes? Closing vote. Closing vote closed. Senate File 98, 30 ayes. Senate File 101, are there any changes? Closing vote. Closing vote closed. Senate File 101, 30 ayes. Senate File 107, are there any changes? Closing vote. Closing vote closed. Senate File 107, 30 ayes. Senate File 110, are there any changes? Schiffer, aye to no. Burns, aye to no. Ross, aye to no. Closing vote. Closing vote closed. Senate File 110. 27 ayes, 3 noes.
Having received the affirmative vote of the majority of the members elected to the Senate, Senate File 60, Senate File 72, Senate File 95, Senate File 98, Senate File 101, Senate File 107, and Senate File 110 have passed the Senate. Senate File 54, third reading of the Senate file.
Senate File 54, sponsored by Senator Massey, physical therapist licensure, and act relating to physical therapist, being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
There is a amendment. The reading clerk, please read in the amendment.
Senate File 54, third reading amendment number 1, page 35, line 2.
Senator Myers.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, there's a corrected copy that's going to be coming out on this amendment. We wanted to take out just one section in the way it was written, that it would actually put in a section that was taken out previously. So it will be distributed directly. Could we, I guess, perhaps wait for that, or I've got mine in my hand right now, so it should be here just pretty quick.
We'll stand at ease for a minute until the amendment is distributed.
Third reading amendments again, huh? It's just a short one. It's just a short one. Huh? Did you guys get this? Oh, okay. All right. Okay. Oh, get a look at it. That's the whole crux of the bill is what they're trying to do here, John.
The Senate will come back to order. Senator Myers.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, could the reading clerk please read in that amendment?
Corrected copy, Senate File 54, Third Reading Amendment Number 1, page 35, line 2.
Mr. President, I move further reading of the amendment be dispensed with, and I move introduction of the amendment. Mr. President, what this amendment does is go into the repealer section. And everybody should have a handout that kind of looks like this. This is the actual statute that's being repealed. And so if you take a look at it, we can see just exactly what the broadening and the expansion of this Practice Act is doing, because everybody needs to know what this is. What this amendment seeks to do is to put this language back in the bill. And there are some very important reasons to do that, Mr. President. And I think the most important one is this general safety and welfare of the public and the people that are treated by our health professionals in the state. Currently, we have some modest restrictions on the direct access of a physical therapist. They're very modest. If you look at this situation, that they can, without a prescription, physical therapy, but it's limited to 12 visits or for a 30-day period, whichever occurs earlier. And then after that, they have to refer that patient to a licensed physician, somebody that can actually do the diagnosis and order the tests and find out why the person isn't getting any better. And if we take this part of it out of it, then that's taken away from that option is really taken away from the person who has an ailment. And that's something I think is very problematic. It also takes, if we leave this repealer in, it also takes away the clinical experience that you see on the 5 years clinical experience or a master's degree, because that's the only way a physical therapist of that caliber with that experience can have direct access. Without this, a physical therapist with a bachelor's degree with 1 day's experience can have direct access. And so When the Practice Act was put forth here a few years ago, we understood that there had to be some standards and qualifications for people to have direct access, and we're taking those standards and qualifications away with this deletion. And we're also taking the requirement to see the physicians. Now, They say that you can have that direct access, and if you look at the 1, 2, 3 there, it's when there's reasonable cause for symptoms and conditions that are present that require a scope of physical therapy practice, or physical therapy is contraindicated. And we had that discussion earlier today in the session about when someone had a back pain and the pain was too severe, and the statute said they had to refer the patient to another physician. That will no longer be the case. The physical therapist would not have to do that. So, you know, we're taking away a lot of safeguards by taking this section out. And I think that we need to take a real long look at it. And hopefully that we can put this section back in and give that level of protection back to the general public. So I ask for your favorable consideration.
Senator Massey.
Thank you, Mr. President. First of all, you know, putting this in context, when we put this provision in 6 years ago, 35 other states at that time already permitting direct access without limitation, and there were no problems. The language that folks see in front of us here 6 years ago was a compromise between the physical therapist and the medical society in order to work out this language and to say, let's open up direct access for a while with these restrictions and see how it works. It worked just fine. Okay, what this language essentially says is that folks who have a master's degree or bachelor's degree and 5 years of experience have direct access. If you don't have that, then there are going to be some restrictions with regard to direct access. And the language that's down below in subsection 3 indicates the obvious, and we all understood that when we put this in 6 years ago, and that is if you have 12 visits over a 30-day period, and it's not getting better, and then some services appear to still be necessary, then you make a referral. And that's going to be true of just about any kind of healthcare provider. The reason why this bill now is coming forward and saying, let's get rid of the remaining restrictions, is it's been 6 years. We've tried this out. There have not been problems. There are not problems in other states. These folks are licensed and have a great deal of education and experience to be able to take the training wheels off. And they're able to bike on their own. And with regard, Mr. Chairman, to the specific parts of this direct access that's underlined in this handout, and talking with the medical society, and remember, they were part, and one of the reasons for coming up with this, they don't have any problems with this part of the bill and dropping those particular restrictions. Okay? So I would again indicate that this is a fencing out issue. As you can tell from the one handout and where it originated from, it comes from a group that would financially benefit by continuing to have these restrictions in place. Let's just simply take a look at the evidence. And the evidence in other states and here in Wyoming and the whole reasons for coming up with this direct access all indicate that it's time to go to this particular provision and drop the remaining restrictions.
Further discussion? Senator Scott.
Mr. President, further on and against this particular amendment, let's look at a couple of the specifics. The requirement, master's degree or bachelor's degree with 5 years experience. My understanding is the standard has moved to being a master's degree, and that's what all the physical therapists that are coming out now have. And the bachelor's degree people, they've all got 5 years clinical experience. They're the older graduates, and they've been around long enough. So we can safely get rid of that particular provision. Mr. Chairman, the adding to the argument on the experience, particularly when you're dealing with the younger children, there's a very high degree of overlap between what the physical therapist does and what the occupational therapist does as a practical matter. We have never in this state, or to my knowledge in any other state, and I could be wrong, there may be an exception somewhere, we've never required the occupational therapist to get a prescription. It's simply not necessary. It's an artifact that comes in because the physical therapists were developed much earlier, and it was a precaution when the profession was first setting out, and it's been difficult because there's economic interests at stake here. It's been difficult to get rid of this when it's become unnecessary. And, Mr. Chairman, this is just one small example of how we run our health care costs up by requiring things that are unnecessary and by requiring them to go back after these 12 visits to get another prescription. You're just causing another doctor visit. Now, the doctors don't always insist on a visit, but in this liability age, sometimes they do. Running the price up. So it's just a small instance. It's unnecessary. Let's get this piece of fencing repealed. I urge you to defeat the amendment.
Further discussion? Senator Jennings.
Thank you, Mr. President. The comment that the Medical Society was behind it, I, like most of us, probably have an email in here from the president of the Natrona County Medical Society who said he's strongly against it. So I guess you have, we not only have battling doctors, chiropractors, and PTs, but now we have battling medical associations.
Any further before the sponsor have his second term? Senator Myers.
Thank you, Mr. President. let's go to directly to some of the arguments why we should have this deleted. One, the common practice now that everyone has a master's degree, and I would submit to you the reason why people are moving to a master's degree is the language that is currently in the bill. That's why, because it says a physical therapist with a master's degree or the bachelor's degree of 5 years' experience may initiate physical therapy for a new or reoccurring injury with or without a prescription from a licensed physician, including doctors. And it says nothing in this subsection shall be construed to preclude a physical therapist from treating a chronic or reoccurring injury or condition without a prescription. Now, this is the important part. Provided that the patient or client was previously diagnosed. Now, this particular piece of legislation has got the diagnostic part of it going to the physical therapist and is taking it away from the professional doctors. And that's a problem. If we take this out, there's no longer the requirement of a master's degree. There's nothing in this particular piece of legislation that I can see that requires the board to require a master's degree. So you're lowering the educational requirement and you're giving these people more responsibility and saying that they can do diagnostic things that previously only a higher educated doctors could do. So, you know, there's a problem with that particular thing. We've got some good safeguards in it right now. We haven't had any problems with this. And so basically it's the same old thing. If it's not broke, you know, there's no reason to fix it. So I would hope that you vote this amendment up. And we can go on about the rest of the bill.
Question is, Senate Amendment, Third Reading Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 54. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
Amendment failed. Division been called for. All in favor stand. Those opposed, please stand. This amendment has failed. Senate File 54, having been read three separate times, Senator Bebout.
Thank you, Mr. President. Members of the Senate, just one more time to talk a little bit about this particular bill. And something came up the last 24 hours that I just wanted to mention for our consideration as we vote. And it's been some really good debate, and we all have understood the issues. And I was looking at the issues as on one side we had a lot of doctors' concerns by them, by the by the chiropractors and, of course, on the other side by the physical therapists, and that's fair game. We can make our decisions based on the merits of what everybody's presented and vote accordingly. The thing that's come up that concerns me is, and I'm getting emails lately from the physical therapy side. I hadn't gotten very many until I voted aye on that amendment the other day. And what they're talking about is we've been doing this all along. So, and then they said, well, if the chiropractors didn't like it, why didn't they say something? Well, as I understand the law, they were not allowed to do it all along. So where I'm confused is, are we now saying it's okay to do what you've been doing all along? Or are we saying that, well, it's a good practice because they've been doing it, we haven't heard, so now it's okay? And this is a big difference in how I looked at this bill yesterday. So I guess the question for this body is, do we want to go ahead and say, well, you're doing it, continue to do it, now we'll make it legal, but it's okay because we haven't heard any problems? Do we want to say, maybe we ought to talk about it, think about it, and not move this bill forward? And maybe my good colleague from Albany County can address that, because until I got all these emails, I wasn't really aware of that. And if you look at the law, clearly it does not have anything about manipulation in it. And this bill puts it in there. And also the same with diagnosis. And I also received some emails that talked about the diagnostic session. We're trained to do this. We've been doing it. Why are you raising so much cane about it? Well, it's not in the law, but now we're putting it in. So I'm just confused, Mr. President.
Senator Jennings.
Thank you, Mr. President. I don't know what I have more back home, physical therapists or doctors, and then you throw the chiropractors in there, but they're not seeming to be able to come together. So my question, I have asked two questions of the physical therapists on this bill. Number one question is, what's broken that this bill fixes? And I don't seem to get an answer. What I get is, we want to update the statute, and the other states are doing it, and the feds are going to, but there doesn't seem to be anything broken that they know needs to be fixed. And the other question I ask him is, if this bill fails, will you be financially impacted in your business or your practice? And they kind of stop for a minute, and they say, well, no, we'll just keep doing what we're doing. And so they have a good practice, they're moving forward. And so I think a lot of it is kind of the feeding frenzy on the bill. And when you sit down and say, what's broken? Nobody seems to come up with what's broken. When you say, will it change your business if it doesn't pass? Well, no, we'll just continue like it is. And I think I agree with my colleague from Fremont County. Maybe we need to take a longer look at this, and maybe we need to stop it now, take a better look at it, get all the people together, and make sure we can come up with something they all agree with.
Senator Massey.
Thank you, Mr. President. I've pitched the bill a couple times in committee, as well as we've talked about it out here now for the third reading. And every time I've done that, I've portrayed this section that's on the new language on pages 5 through 8 of the bill as not being new language, as not being new responsibilities or duties for the physical therapist. That it's an updating of the language and a modernizing of the language from the archaic language that's presently in statute that's reflected on the bottom of pages 4 and 5. So naturally, physical therapists are going to say, you're not giving us any additional authority. You're just allowing us to continue to do with what we have been doing. And that was the gist of the argument yesterday when we talked about diagnosis and manual therapy, that it's a very important part of their practice right now. And in taking a look at the handout with my name on it and partially on it, unfortunately the Xerox machine took some of it off, but it says a bone and joint clinic up at the top. This comes from a physician in Laramie talking about how those particular parts of that practice have been a part of physical therapy for many, many years. And then the second page demonstrates from some physical therapists that is part of their training at some rather prestigious universities around the country. So as a result, we've had a good discussion of that. We've had a good discussion of direct access. The direct access, which we just dealt with, is something that's new in the bill, okay, and does make a change. But also want to point to parts of the bill that we really haven't discussed, which are important. The background checks are important as a consumer protection for folks who are being licensed. Foreign students and how we go about, not foreign students, but foreign therapists in how we go about licensing them. Increased protections for the consumers, requiring those who have licenses to practice within their scope of practice and their knowledge and education, and also new provisions with regard to continuing education. We're really tightening up on the standards for licensees in this bill. Reciprocity. And then we have an entire two pages of exclusions of folks who don't have to get licensed in the state. And finally, some important updating of examinations. So there are substance of the bill, and that's the reason it was brought forward, is not only to update the language, but also to put these important provisions in the law. Mr. President, we've had a great discussion of this for 3 days. I think everyone's mind is pretty well made up one way or the other, and I hope that we can proceed with the vote now.
Senator Ross, maybe not.
Thank you, Mr. President. We have had a good discussion. We have had some debate. And the question that I ultimately come back to is the question was raised by Senator Burns originally. What are we trying to fix here? I'm not sure that this bill has had the vetting that you would have if you had a interim study and all the players and everybody else and trying to work out some of these issues. We have been told that this bill has nothing to do with differential diagnosis, but then I receive an email from a physical therapist who says they do differential diagnosis. We hear that there isn't any problems with the way in which direct access is occurring at these times, but then I also receive from a physician, an orthopedic surgeon, who says they've already had problems, that he has had problems with direct access without referral for 30 days or 12 visits. These problems have ranged from incorrect treatment to delayed diagnosis for a more serious condition. For the life of me, I'd love to be able to get over this issue of the diagnosis portion of this bill, but I cannot. And I suspect that what we're trying to do is codify something because they've been outside the scope of what they really should have been doing, if, in fact, they're making differential diagnoses. I suggest to you that that's not good medicine. And I suggest to you that you are potentially increasing costs, particularly if you've gone through a course of treatment and then find out the whole thing was wrong because they didn't have the capacity to make that diagnosis in the first place. They didn't have the capacity to order the tests that were necessary. And this law isn't going to change any of that. So I urge you to seriously consider whether or not this bill is ready for prime time.
Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. President. I've listened to a good deal of the debate, and I still remain in a bit of a quandary. And I'm hesitant sometimes to bring personal issues into the debate, but having listened to this, I might share. I have three personal experiences, only one of which I really detail. I had one experience in regard to a hip replacement with a senior relative, and the diagnosis didn't go well in regard to the postoperative practice with that, and there were some problems with physical therapists there. Another had to do with a broken hip, and there was some difficulty in regard to the appropriate diagnosis there. But the thing that I wanted to detail, I'm a prostate cancer survivor, 5 years, and that's good. And I'll tell some of you people that you older males, which there's many of us in this body, I went about 3 years prior to diagnosis with a backache. And it just continued to ache. And I saw a lot of people, and I saw physical therapists, and my back continued to ache. Well, I happen to know a pretty good urologist. And he told me, he said, first of all, he says, Dad, you go get a PT exam. And I went and got a PT, and I didn't have real high numbers. But he said, those numbers have changed enough. In conjunction with your backache, you better go get a biopsy. He caught it early. And I have to tell you, within days after that radical prostatectomy, that surgery, the backache went away.
5 years and I've not had a backache. But I'm going to tell you, there's a critical component here in regard to the ability to make a diagnosis. Now, I don't know as I'm really speaking for or against this bill. I'm still in a bit of a quandary. But I have to tell you that there is a real fine line and a real ability, and to those people who train as physicians, as specialists, to really detail and recognize those symptoms that are sometimes, I think, very critical. So I'll have to say, even though I haven't decided in regard to how I'm going to cast my vote, this idea of the ability to diagnose by a lesser trained individual is still, in many ways, problematic to me.
Senator Scott.
President, speaking on for the bill, let me deal with a couple of the issues. And let me first respond to the one personal example with one of my own. I had a backache back in the days when you had to go see your doctor first. So I did. And he didn't hesitate. But go see the physical therapist. Get it taken care of. He didn't examine for other things or anything else. He just said, go do it. And that's the first step that the doctor would naturally take. Very common circumstance. And then if it doesn't cure up, then you think about it. But there's just no point in requiring us to go see the doctor to be told to go see the physical therapist. And so I think that, you know, we've been debating this bill not 3 days. This issue's been around at least 20 years, to my knowledge. And we've heard just about all the arguments we're going to hear. It seems to me that the answer, there's two issues outstanding. One, a part of our medical community is having difficulty understanding that diagnosis sometimes means something other than the full differential diagnosis they do. And I recall to you the discussion in Committee of the Whole from the good senator from Gillette as to give you some specific examples of what a physical therapy diagnosis was. That's not the kind of diagnosis medical doctors do. They're not trespassing into that field. And some of them are having trouble understanding it. I think in some cases an economic motivation involved, but the difficulty is there. The other thing I would say, and the question is there going to be an impact if we stay with the current thing on the physical therapist's income? I don't think so. The impact is going to be you're going to have some reduction in health care costs, and that affects all of us. And this is just one small step, and it's a small step, that we can take in dealing with that overwhelming issue. I urge the passage of the bill.
Senator Massey, for your second time, is there anyone else wishes to speak before the sponsor of the bill speak for the second time? Senator Massey.
Thank you, Mr. President. And just very quickly, physical therapists can diagnose now. They can provide manual therapy. They bill insurance companies. They have billing codes to most of our major insurance companies, and they get reimbursed for it. This bill will not change that, and I listed all the other things that would be beneficial with the passage of this bill.
Are you ready for the question? Senate File 54, having been read three separate times, the question is, shall the bill pass? The chief clerk will call the roll.
Anderson?
Aye.
Bebout?
No.
Burns?
Aye.
Case?
Aye.
Coe?
No.
Cooper?
Aye.
DeCaria?
Aye.
Dockstader?
Aye.
Esquibel?
Aye.
Geis?
Aye.
Hastert?
Aye.
Honeycutt?
Aye.
Jennings?
No.
Johnson?
Aye.
Landon?
Aye.
Larson?
Aye.
Martin?
Aye.
Massey?
Aye.
Meyer?
No.
Nicholas?
Aye.
Perkins?
No.
Peterson?
No.
Ross?
No.
Schiffer?
Aye.
Scott?
Aye.
Sessions?
Aye.
Townsend?
No.
Basie?
Aye.
Bonflatern?
Aye.
President Hines?
Aye.
Closing vote? Closing vote closed. 22 ayes, 8 noes.
Senate File 54, having received the affirmative vote of the majority of the members elected to the Senate, Senate File 54 have passed the Senate. Considerations of bills on general file. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move that the Senate resolve itself into the Committee of the Whole.
You've heard the motion. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Motion carried. Senator Hastert, would you take the desk, please?
In order now? Are we ready? Committee of the Whole will come to order. The first bill for our consideration is Senate File 103. The reading clerk will please read the bill.
Senate File Number 103, sponsored by Senator Ross, Child Abuse Neglect Amendments, an act relating to child protection. It was referred to Committee Number 1, Judiciary. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Burns, DeCarrier, Perkins, Ross, and Sessions. Senator Ross, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Senator Ross?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rise report it do so with a due pass recommendation on Senate File 103, Child Abuse and Neglect Amendments. Members of the Senate, this bill comes to you by way of my district court judge here in Laramie County, district court judge district number one, Judge Grant. The way in which they develop their caseloads in Laramie County is they divide up their work in the with regards to juveniles. There's various different components to juvenile court cases. This only deals with abuse and neglect cases. And Judge Grant has the task totally of dealing with abuse and neglect cases. And as a result of his many years of working on these kinds of cases and his frustration, in essence, with the current state of the law, worked diligently to come up with some changes to the abuse and neglect statutes that help streamline these cases and help to achieve permanency. This bill was also then vetted with the District Court Judges Judicial Conference, who voted, when I presented it to them, unanimously to support this bill. So what does this bill do? It does a couple of things. The first things that it does is it, on page 2, and there are other references in the bill, to this also, but it allows, I think first of all you need to understand that our district court judges are courts of general jurisdiction. They wear multiple hats. In the same day they could be a criminal district court judge. In the same day they could be in the civil docket. In the same day they could be in probate. Or in the same day, with regards to this bill, they could be running juvenile court. What 122.104 and 32101 allow is that if there is already a juvenile petition and a juvenile case going on, and remember that juvenile cases are much more hands-on in terms of the information that a district court judge gets, because you have multiple stages of hearings, status hearings, conferences, MDTs, multiple disciplinary teams, who are dealing with an individual or child who is deemed to have been abused or neglected. The primary goal, of course, is reunification with the family, but secondarily is permanency. And this bill attempts to help us in getting a handle on permanency. And one of the things that in achieving permanency is, of course, adoption of the child and or guardianship, somebody that will be legally determined to be a guardian of the child. Right now, the way in which the system is, guardianship cases and adoption cases are separate and apart from the juvenile case. We're not taking that away. You could still have separate cases for adoption or guardianship. But in this case, if you have an ongoing juvenile case, it will allow the court to transfer an adoption case into the juvenile case, to allow the participants within the juvenile case to resolve that issue with regards to custody, guardianship, or adoption. Now, many times, these individuals, and more often than not, that are involved in the juvenile court system, don't have much money. And so as you're working towards permanency, in these cases, the testimony has been, last many times for a couple years, maybe even 3, 4, 5 years. And they're finally getting to a place where somebody's willing to step up and be the guardian or the adoption. And then the court in the juvenile court says, well, where are we on that? But nobody else has gone to the other kind of docket and actually filed a separate adoption case. Partly because of the cost of having to get another attorney and then filing the procedures, doing all of that outside of the juvenile case itself. This would allow an adoption or a guardian to be done within the juvenile case, where they have appointed attorneys for them already. And the court is very familiar with the situation. It doesn't have to be that way, but it can be. And it streamlines and ultimately allows for basically a joining of the actions. Does it change or do anything with regards to due process or depriving anybody of due process? The same requirements are still there. The same kinds of service of process, same kinds of rights to respond, the same kinds of burdens of proof. All of that is still within the court's jurisdiction. It's simply a way to allow, within the juvenile case itself, ultimately some permanency. The other problem that this bill attempts to address is with regard to an absent parent who is not alleged to have been the abuser or the one who neglected the child, and generally they're absent. They're not around. They really have had not any involvement with the child at all. And, of course, they're not alleged to have been the abuser. But so much of what happens is that as the case moves on, this individual, and unfortunately it seems that it's more often than not, at least from the testimony, and I want to be clear here, I don't really practice much in the area of juvenile cases, but as a general rule, what we heard was that it's generally an absent father, a father who isn't involved. More often than not, you have a woman who has a child and generally may have several children from several different parents, but they're not around. And they're not participating, but yet, as they move through the case, they still have rights. And what happens is at a later date, all of a sudden, dad pops up. We're about ready to go into permanency. We're about ready to have an adoption or permanent foster care or something. And dad pops up and says, well, wait a minute, I didn't do anything. And basically queers the whole process simply because he wasn't involved. Or he says, I didn't have notice or whatever. So part of what this bill does is to say, look, we allow service by publication in all kinds of cases. We allow service of publication in adoption. We allow service of publication by publication in termination of parental rights cases. But yet we don't allow service of process by publication. So what part of this bill does is to allow service by publication. Now, I want to make sure that you understand that's the last resort. And we don't take out anything else in the bill with regards to service of process. What we want is that parent to have notice that the hearing is moving forward. And that once you have notice, if you've gotten served by the normal service of process, there's also still in the statute service by certified mail. And if you can't locate them, then the court, under the rules of civil procedure, the Department of Family Services, who has to be reasonably diligent in trying to find this person, must file an affidavit showing all of their how in which they have tried to locate this parent. And then the court makes a decision as to whether or not service of public can be done by publication. What we want them to do is say, okay, you got notice. We gave them 60 days in this bill. You got notice. You need to put up or shut up. You need to come in and participate in the case. You need to answer. File a pleading. And if you don't, there's going to be certain consequences. You can't just stand back and say, well, I'm not a party to this. I didn't do anything wrong. And then at the end of the day, end game, when we're trying to get permanency, come in and say, wait a minute, I have rights. And now we have to go through this whole idea again of reunification of maybe should the child be with this absent parent. But I will tell you that that is problematic in and of itself. Judge Grant testified about the fact that these individuals have been gone and have had no involvement with the child, perhaps ever. So it's not really that plausible or feasible to say, okay, well, let's just put this child with dad. Kid doesn't even know dad. But probably for the last couple of years has established a relationship with their foster care provider who wishes to adopt the child. It happens quite a bit. Or other family members. So that's where you see on page 3, a failure to comply or a refusal to participate in the case plan may constitute neglect in and of itself. On page 4, we have that issue again about combining the cases. Custody can be determined in the juvenile case, guardianship or adoption. Then you have on 14.3.4.13, with respect to a child who is alleged to have been abused or neglected, a non-custodial parent or putative father. I want to make sure you understand what a putative father is. This is the person that mom identifies as the father but has never been adjudicated to be the father. It's whom everybody believes is the father, but has never been legally determined to be the father. So if this individual, putative father, who has not had custody of the child, removed by the court, and who is alleged and is not alleged to have abused and neglected the child, shall be served with notice pursuant to 413, 414, and 415. Those are what I just told you about in terms of our normal service of process and service by certified mail. And then we set out a litany of what they're going to be noticed of, that they have to respond, that a petition has been filed, that you have 60 days to respond. Failure to appear or to participate may result in termination of parental rights. that non-custodial parent may be considered for placement. So they must not only that, they must respond. They must admit or deny in juvenile court. You either admit or deny. It's a civil proceeding, so you don't plead guilty or not guilty. You either admit or deny the allegations. That person needs to submit to the jurisdiction of the court, cooperate with the Department of Family Services and the case plan, provide information as needed to the MDT teams and so forth, and pay your support. Most of the time, there may not even be support ordered. So, what happens in those situations? Well, dad really doesn't want to participate in this case because he doesn't want to have to pay support. And I see it all the time, even not only in juvenile cases, but in domestic relation cases. I'd rather wash my hands of the whole thing, step back, stay out of it. As long as I don't have notice, I don't have to complain, and I don't have to pay child support. It's all about the bucks a lot of times, folks. With regard to service of process on page 7, this is where we bring in the service by publication, as provided by the rules of civil procedure, which I've already discussed to you, how and which you get to service by publication. That is the last way in which you can have service. So what happens then? If the absent father, the absent parent, and I tend to use the word father, but I'm not trying to make it a gender bias here. It can be the other way around. It's just more prevalent the way in which I've been describing it to you. That parent in 427 doesn't participate or whatnot. You are prohibited later on from objecting or complaining about the services that were provided to the child and the family. With regard to the final page, when we were redrafting, and we've done multiple, I shouldn't say redrafting, but amending our juvenile statutes along the way, and it seems to be a yearly process for the Judiciary Committee to amend the statutes. We had a pretty big overhaul a few years ago, and one of the things that was inadvertently left out is actually on page 8. In the original statute, there was the ability of the court to determine, based on the evidence, whether or not permanency is even, or reunification is even doable. And for some reason, that was taken out. And we're not certain why. But there are those cases where it is so obvious that this court needs to just move to permanency, needs to move this case to permanency. Many of these cases, the way in which it's occurring, it's just languishing. They languish and languish. And I think this is a good step. It doesn't deprive anybody of any rights, but it allows us to move and to combine cases, to move them forward, to do it expediently, and still have due process. And so that's what this bill does, and I'd stand for any questions, but I'd urge your favorable consideration.
Any further debate? Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, and this is a bill that I want to be able to support. It's an important area. The objective of achieving permanency is a very important one, and my understanding, most of the circumstances are as was what was just described. I'm going to ask a couple of questions that really relate to what would probably be atypical, very unusual cases. Page 7, line 13 through 19. The new language there says if a parent chooses not to comply or participate in the case plan developed by the department, parent is prohibited from later objecting to or complaining about services provided by child and family. And little concerned about that, and let me describe a hypothetical case just to see if there's any, there's a potential problem in here. Assume you have a divorced couple, altogether too common in our society. Assume, and let's say for the sake of argument, probably it's dad, is periodically absent for extended periods from the community. In my community, there's a number of people, mostly men, that work overseas in the oil business, can be gone to Russia or to Arabia or someplace like that for extended periods, or I suppose could be deployed with our National Guard currently. And they really weren't involved in the case plan at all. It was done when they were out of the country, but they when they're available, they do try to participate in the child's life. Are they precluded by this section from saying, look, the services that are being provided by DFS just aren't working, and DFS, you need to do something different? So that's my first question.
Senator Ross.
Well, Mr. Chairman, in regards to that specific case, that would not be a possibility because the deployed individual is protected by the Soldiers and Sailors Relief Act. And it is, so that may not be a good example because in that situation they are protected from under that act from any civil process or anything else going on in the courts while they're deployed or out of the country. But let's say that that person is not. I think it would be a factual situation for the court to determine whether or not this person, first of all, had notice, and of course, and was basically, for lack of a better term, unable to participate because of the circumstances in the case. If he had notice and knew about it and filed his response, he could, you know, indicate to the court that he is out. It's going to be hard for me to participate. Those are situations where I think here you got a father that probably wants to be involved, and when he does come back, is involved. So in that situation, I think the other language in the current statutes, and particularly Wyoming Supreme Court cases, which have made it nearly impossible to terminate parental rights nowadays. It's gotten to a point where it's so difficult that you can almost not terminate parental rights. So I think given all of that other law and case law, in that situation you would not see this individual being precluded from objecting.
Senator Scott.
And then a similar question on page 6, lines 22 through page 7, line 1, and again, concerned about the father who's absent, and I'm glad to hear what you said about the people who are deployed. That takes care of that. But the father that's absent, again, business reasons, and the oil business does travel people, and sometimes for extended periods. Are they adequately protected here, particularly if you're doing notice by publication, and they were off in the wilds of Siberia with some oil company for a while when the publication occurs and simply don't have any knowledge? Is somebody like that adequately protected? And, Mr. Chairman, the previous response leads to another question. You do need to be able to terminate the parental rights at some point because you need to get that permanency. Does this act correct the errors that the Supreme Court has made in making it almost impossible?
Senator Ross.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I believe it does. First of all, remember, it's if you've been in foster care for 15 of the most recent 22 months, you're supposed to go right to permanency. In the situation where you are working for a company, and I'd have to pull out Rule 4, and I don't think we have the rules here, but Rule 4 of the Wyoming Rules of Civil Procedure discuss about service of process and notice. Well, there would be a number of ways in which you could obtain notice to an individual who is working and employed by contacting, more often than not. Our Child Support Services Division knows and has all the data on who's working and W-2s and all that stuff to provide notice through the employer or by certified mail. I mean, it wouldn't take very much, and you'd still be able to do that. And remember, service by publication is last ditch. You have to file, pursuant to Rule 4, you have to file an affidavit outlining all of your due diligence in attempting to locate this individual before you can actually serve by publication. So I think that there's ways that could occur. Now, am I going to say there's going to be, I don't think any kind of statute that we pass can cover all the factual situations that may or may not occur. But I think the goal in passing legislation is to try to be broad enough to capture what you're really trying to get at. There could be situations where you'd have some sort of potential. I can't say that there couldn't be, where somebody may not have been treated fairly. That's where, I guess, the Wyoming Supreme Court would come into this matter. Wyoming Supreme Court has gotten so bad that with regards to this that, I mean, if you're the absent father is in prison and has been in prison the whole time and we're just about to get to permanency and father steps in and says, well, wait a minute, I didn't do anything wrong, but I've been in prison. And the Supreme Court has said you can't terminate his parental rights. So, you know, I mean, there's good and bad things that can occur, but I think overall what this does is provide a more smooth ability to get some permanency.
Any further discussion? Senator Schiffer.
Mr. Chairman, first of all, more of a question on the wording for the sponsor. On page 2, line 13, where you talk about the district court may transfer jurisdiction and so on and so forth, and then over, and I think it deals with the same process, over on page 4, line 8, you use the word shall. The district court shall certify the question of custody to the juvenile court. And I think those deal with the same process. One's a may, one's a shall. I'm not sure why that is. But anyway, we'll get to that. Somebody will get to that. But my other question is, again, going to page 7, I'm troubled by 14.3.427. It seems to me, and I know permanency is the buzzword and the federal government mandates it to 15 out of 22 and all that stuff. And as I read this bill, it makes it easier to terminate parental rights than what we have now. But I'm concerned that if the non-custodial parent is brought in, and particularly here where they have to participate in the case plan developed by the department, I find those words troubling, primarily because the underlying feature of DFS's way of operating is if you don't do what we tell you to do, we're going to take your kid away. I mean, that's, sometimes they say it, sometimes they just imply it. And the second reason I'm concerned is over and over, if you go up and visit either one of the institutions where we incarcerate our juveniles, the one thing that they hang on to is their parents. Without exception, I have never, it just happens, the girls' school is in my district, and you can go up there, you know, you can pick a day, any day of the week, or go up there before Thanksgiving recess when they try and furlough some of those girls home. And you, the parents that show up to pick these kids up, they're never going to be movie stars, I assure you of that. But every single time, without exception, these girls recognize a parent, good, bad, or indifferent. And it is incredibly strong, that bond. And now we're making it easier for the sake of permanency. And you know, I guess what I'm saying is I'm not too sure permanency is all that great. I realize it's a federal law, so it must be great. But I'm having trouble, and I have for many years. But again, that's the law. But do we really want to make it easier to sever that bond? And I'm not sure we do. But anyway, a technical question and I guess on the paragraph on page 7.
Senator Ross.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. With regards to the difference between the may and the shall, you know, I was reading that last night and I had the same question. It may that we may just want to change that from may or shall to may. I think what it amounts to is that you already have an ongoing juvenile case going on. You may have a similar thing where there's now an issue in the district court itself, perhaps a custody case, of just certifying that question to the juvenile court to combine them. I think that that's something that can be tweaked, and I don't really have a real problem with that. I will have to bring an amendment anyway, because on that very same page, I think there's a typo. In line 13, it says guardianship of legal custody, and I think that should say guardianship or legal custody. So I can certainly do that if that is good with the body. But to address your other question, I think the first thing you also have to remember is that the burden of proof in termination is higher. I think it's by clear and convincing evidence in termination, so that's even higher burden of proof. But what this says is that this person has taken an active position, for lack of a better word, if the parent chooses, it's willful, if the parent chooses not to comply or participate in the case plan, then he's prohibited later on from objecting. It also implies, and as it is even now, we provide guardian ad litem not only for the children, but we provide attorneys for the parents. If you don't like what's going on with the case plan, you object. You object to the court. But you're participating. You're participating, but if you choose to just not do anything, then what we're saying is you can't come back later on and complain. Get in the game. Get in the case and participate. It's your child, for God's sake. From a lot of these people, they just don't care, which just boggles my mind. I mean, the most precious things that we do in this world is raise children. But there are many people that are just not, that's just not it for them. I don't know why, but it isn't. So what this is, I think there's protection in the language because they have chosen, they have willfully chosen not to participate. We provide for all kinds of due process in these hearings. And counsel and attorneys object to it if you don't like what DFS is doing. And I can understand that. Recently, I did do a juvenile case pro bono. And did that very same thing. I said, you know, we've been doing this for a long time. And I don't see any results. We need to do something here. So I asked the court. Said, we need to do something. Because this isn't working. So you have that opportunity if you have counsel. And we have provided, through that new GAL program, we have provided some superior training now for attorneys in this area. And they have to be certified now and have gone through the courses to be involved in these cases. They're special cases and difficult ones to work through. And you're absolutely correct that, you know, it is a fundamental right in the United States to be a parent, to not have been to that parent-child relationship. And when you get beyond, I mean, you're absolutely correct. They identify, they want to have that relationship with the parent, the girl school or whatever. They want that. We want that to occur, but you got to get in the game.
Any further discussion? Senator Esquivel.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. First of all, I want to congratulate a good friend from Laramie County, good Senator, for bringing this bill up and trying to make the situation become a little bit more smooth for many people in a difficult situation. I share some of the same feelings that the good Senator from Casey mentioned. I guess what I want to mention a situation that happened in Casper recently where a warrant was being executed, and the people on whom that warrant was being executed apparently thought they were going to be executed. Why do I bring that up? I bring that up basically to stress the point of communication. Many of the people that we're dealing with in this particular field, well, let's face it, communication is very difficult to begin with. It's difficult when you're speaking the same language, when you have the same educational background, when you're in the same employment field. It's still difficult sometimes to communicate with one another. It's even more difficult when you have some of those, when you're not on an equal plane. I guess what I'm getting to, Mr. Chairman, is the concern I have is that many of these case plans are developed by well-meaning, young, educated social workers. Many of the people they're dealing with have many problems, in many cases substance abuse, income problems, transportation problems, poor support systems, things of this nature, and many of the social workers are working with overloaded caseloads. You know, so sometimes, I think it's very easy to develop a case plan that, in effect, forces some people to just give up, overwhelmed with some of the requirements that might be asked, because some of these problems aren't being considered. Transportation, as I mentioned, can be a big one. Support systems, things of that nature. So I guess I'd just like to throw that out as a word of caution. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Any further discussion? Senator Scott.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I would caution the Senate, don't underestimate the importance of getting permanency in these cases. I'll hark back When I was growing up, my dad was practicing pediatrician in Casper. And, you know, he never talked about a case with names or anything like that, but he sure did in generalities. He had to deal with some of these cases. And where the parents just aren't there, just aren't participating, there is... you get a situation where the kid really doesn't have an adult to form an attachment to. And if you want to develop a sociopathic personality, you get that kind of circumstance where the kid is floating around from one adult to the next and never has the feeling that any adult cares about him. Those are the kind of cases where the permanency becomes super important. And in that informal day and age, he could go to the judge, probably strictly against all the current judicial canons and whatnot, and say, for God's sake, you've got to make a decision. You're getting in trouble with this kid. And that was how they handled it then. And maybe you can't do that. You need to have all these proper legal procedures. But they need to be able to be done rapidly, because otherwise you do tremendous harm to these kids. And you have to... be careful to make sure that your statute is written so in the cases that were described with the girls' school, where there obviously was that bond, that those parents and that bond is protected. But I'll tell you, there's some cases out there, and we've got to not think about it in terms of our own families. You've got to think about what happens in the totally dysfunctional family, where getting that permanency is absolutely crucial to that kid having a chance in life. And so if this bill is well done, I think it's a very important one that we pass. I think we're well to question it to make sure it's well done. But getting that permanency is very important. There was a reason the feds have legislated the way they have, and it's a sound reason.
Any further discussion? Are you ready for the question? Question being called. All those in favor of Senator Ross's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, that it do so with a favorable recommendation on Senate File 103, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay. Senate File 103 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration, Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Mr. Chairman, I move that the Committee of the Whole beg leave to rise and set again.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor?
Aye.
Those opposed?
Reports from standing committees.
January the 29th, 2009, Mr. President, your committee number 7, Corporation Elections and Political Subdivision, to whom was referred Senate File 104, reports back with the recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Case, Cooper, Hastert, Johnson, and Scott, Senator Case, Chairman. January the 29th, 2009, Mr. President, your committee number 7, Corporation Elections and Political Subdivisions, to whom was referred Senate File 28, reports back with the recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Case, Cooper, Hastert, Johnson, and Scott, Senator Case, Chairman. January the 29th, 2009, Mr. President, your committee number 2, Appropriations, to whom was referred Senate File 14, reports back with the recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Massey, Meyer, Nicholas, Peterson, Townsend, Senator Nicholas, Chairman. January the 29th, 2009, Mr. President, your committee number 2, Appropriations, to whom was referred Senate File 17, reports back with the recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Massey, Meyer, Nicholas, Peterson, and Townsend, Senator Nicholas, Chairman. January the 29th, 2009, Mr. President, your committee number 7, Corporation Elections and Political Subdivisions, to whom was referred Senate File 27, reports back with the recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Case, Hastert, Johnson, Scott. No, Senator Cooper, Senator Case, Chairman. January the 29th, 2009, Mr. President, your committee number 8, Transportation, Highways, and Military Affairs, to whom was referred Senate File 119, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Dockstader, Escobel, Geis, Landon, and Von Flatren, Senator Von Flatren, Chairman. January the 29th, 2009, Mr. President, your committee number 8, Transportation, Highways, and Military Affairs, to whom was referred House Bill 55, engrossed, reports back with the recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Dockstader, Escobel, Geis, Landon, Von Flatren, Senator Von Flatren, Chairman.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader, that clears the desk.
Mr. President, I move that the Senate recess until 2 p.m. this afternoon.
Announcements.
Mr. President.
Senator Geis.
And Water Resources, upon adjournment tonight, will take up Senate File 133, Pet Animal Care and Facility Act, SJR 4, Blacktail Prairie Dog.
Senator Burns.
Mr. President, your committee number 6, Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, and Cultural Resources, will meet at 12:15 up in S-14. And for those keeping score, we're going to reverse the order of the bills. And we'll start with House Bill 88, Game and Fish Pioneer Licenses, and then go to House Bill 11, Engrossed Dogs Chasing Wildlife.
Senator Ross.
Thank you, Mr. President. Your committee number 1, Judiciary, will meet tomorrow morning at 8 a.m. to consider the following bills. House Bill 19, Criminal Procedure Mental Evaluations. House Bill 20, Criminal Procedure Administration of Antipsychotic Drugs. And Senate File 136, Homicide Aggravating Circumstances.
Senator Von Flatren.
Thank you, Mr. President. Senate File 119, which was just read in from committee, has a it's public transportation funding. It has a small appropriation. I ask that it be re-referred to appropriation.
Senate File, without objection, Senate File 119 will be referred to Committee Number 2, Appropriations. Senator Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. President. I would point out that all sponsors of all bills says it's just a small appropriation. Mr. President, the Senate Appropriations Committee is going to be meeting at 1 p.m. to consider Senate File 100, Public School Nurse Appropriation. Senate File 32, Wyoming Livestock Health and Emergency Disease Program. Senate File 67, Water Development Funding, and we're meeting on adjournment to consider Senate File 10, Brucellosis Management Program. Senate File 87, Wolf Brucellosis Testing. And Senate File 73, Gillette-Madison Pipeline Project. Thank you.
Senator Schiffer.
Mr. President, Committee Number 3, Revenue, will meet in about 30 minutes up in S-16 to continue our discussion on House Bill 67, Engrossed Tobacco Excise Tax, and take up House Bill 102, Engrossed Excise Tax Vendor Compensation, and House Bill 101, Engrossed Excise Tax Manufacturing Exemption.
You've heard the motion that the Senate stand in recess until 2 p.m. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Amendment, motion passed, and we're in recess until 2 p.m.